Yeah.
Sorry, Tony.
No, not crying. So here's the thing. This needs to be mentioned before we go any further. Tony's budget. Tony's been great about dealing with a lot of what-ifs. When he originally proposed his budget, he had in place a parks playground program as well as money allocated to staff a spray park. Then I came in at the last budget meeting that Tony was presenting and said that the senator's office thought that it might take a year to process this $100,000 grant that we were awarded. So that put Tony into an instant adjustment, and so that was part of his presentation last week. I got off the phone with DASNY yesterday. DASNY supposedly has doubled the size of their staff, and now it is completely reasonable to think that this might be awarded by year end. That being said, the amount of Tony's budget that was cut as a result of that adjustment was, I think, just one person staffing the spray park.
Right.
And it was a relatively small amount, or it was two people, because they'd have to cover from 11 to, you have one, or no, you had one person.
One, well,
it was $1,800 around.
Yeah, we'd have like two staff, but it'd be one.
So for some, if the skies parted and the sun came out and everything worked and we were able to move forward with the project and we had to staff it for next year, we would be able to do that with the budget that was presented by Tony last week.
Awesome.
So keep that in mind. Okay. But I wanted to give you an update. So there is a glimmer of hope that this grant will be processed much quicker than originally communicated to me. All right, Tony.
Okay, we're going to go to 85, page 85. That's where I left off on my notes. Because the last we talked about was the concert series that I upped it from 4,500 to 5,000 for the fact that we're trying to maybe add a couple concert series, concerts on Friday nights to help with the need of Paper Mile Island and communities' wants of more concerts on the island. So page 85, we're looking at line item 7310102. Right now, I believe in there was $19,488. Is that what you guys have on there?
On page 85?
Yes.
Yep.
19,488.
Yeah, add these two together.
Okay.
What we're going to do is we're going to eliminate them. We're going to take those right out right now because we will not be running a summer playground program.
The day camp.
Yeah. Yep.
So 16 grand.
Gone.
19,488. Mm. The director's salary and the counselor's salary.
That's 20,200.
Let's get the numbers right.
That's 4,200 and 15,288, which adds to 19,488.
I was looking at the tape.
So that's coming off.
That's coming off, though. That's coming off. At 7310103, we're going to keep that. I kind of like myself and staying employed.
Which one?
The 7310103. That's mine. That's my salary. Page 86, 73109. The 109 salaries are who we pay on payroll. These are people that work for us, and what I listed was a whole, you can see here, special events, the amount of staff, the amount of hours, and approximate the times that they worked, and right now, and the GEMS program, because we had to put GEMS into salary-based payroll. We couldn't contractually pay them out, so they were added in for this year's budget, and we upped it from 4,000 to 8,000.
So what? What you're saying by is that all these other items above gyms would amount to $4,000.
Correct. Right,
which was last year's budget.
Right.
And we're just the pass-through agency on that.
Yes. Yep. Yes, correct.
Okay. What was your question?
Pardon me?
What was your question? I didn't hear what you just said.
We're just a pass-through agency.
Oh, we're the gyms thing. Yeah.
Yeah, the school can't collect fees. Double, they can't do all that. So we contract the teachers as our staff, and then we pay them accordingly to run the program. And I'm trying to find out if the GEMS program will qualify for our assisted funding from County Family Health Services.
Every year we get around $2,500 in grant dollars for programming for kids. I'm confident that Tony's going to find a program within Lysander Park so we no longer are going to have the
playground
program. That used to help fund the playground program. So we're positioning GEMS because it's supposed to go towards
free programming, something that's going to offset the cost for free programming. They can't charge a fee for that.
So window painting.
I don't know what it's going to go to, but I'll try to find something where it'll qualify.
If we don't charge a fee for the spray park, would that qualify?
It's not a camp. I don't know.
It's not a program. That's a facility. That's a...
That we're using.
Yeah. Might as well be like a swing set. You can't get funding for that. You need some sort of a program driven.
I'll look and I'll work with the Onondaga County.
I was going to say, what's the definition of a program?
Right. Yeah. Technically, we weren't supposed to charge a fee for it to get it, but all the other towns that I know of use it towards their playground program, and they all charge fees for it. Van Buren does. Camillus does.
Maybe there's something we can utilize our historian for to run a program just on the history of Beeville a day or two.
I'll work with Onondaga County Health, and I'll try to find what we can use that and try to apply for that funding. But I did not put it in our budget just in case it didn't come through.
All right, so if
it does, it's a little...
Yeah.
It's a bonus if it comes through.
Yeah, it's a bonus if it comes through. On page 87, 7310, 401, contractual fees, I dropped that from 22 to 18. The 4,000 went into the previous other line item, bumping it up to 8. 7310, 406, the transportation, and that's going to be eliminated because summer playground programs is going to be eliminated. It's $3,000 right there. 7310, 407, day camp supplies and materials. $5,000 is going to be taken off that line item too. Where am I?
So that brought the total from 26,000 to 18,000.
Correct. Yep. Okay. Moving into adult recreation. I kept everything the same, 7620-1, kept it the same, but no changes there. Contractual adult recreation, 7620-4, I dropped it from 2,500 to 1,500. So I cut 1,000 out of that line item. And then for the capital improvement funding, our capital, we put $5,000 into that.
Yeah, there's not a page for that. It's over under 1620.
Page,
yeah. Yeah, go back.
It's under 1620, you said?
It's on the book.
Yeah. 1620-405. 406.
What page is that?
I'm getting it.
0-16-20-406.
Does it say what I put in there last year?
You put 9925. Didn't we talk to Bob? Didn't Bob suggest that we put that up to 10? Because of all the cuts that he put in?
Not any conversation I had.
I don't know. That's the one that was 99.5 last year.
Well, my request is that going through here and to recap the cuts that I made. From 7020-4, there was $5,352 I cut. From line item 7110401, I cut 15,000. For 7310102, I cut $19,488. From line item 7310406-407, transportation and day camp supplies, I cut 8,000, totaling $47,840. With the added line items that I added for the tires and a new gator, only added up to $13,500, giving me a total savings or cut out of the budget for $34,340, which, you know, even that's even including
the 13.
The even counting the 13 for the Little League and for a new staff member to be added in.
So you're saving 34 grand
that I originally proposed.
Gotcha. Okay.
So and I went back to answer the question that was asked previous. If we looked at adding somebody full time, would it affect the question of the part-time help in the office? And the answer would be yes. It would definitely cut those hours.
Which was allocated for $8,000 this summer?
No, that's the
$22,000. Oh, okay. Right. Okay. Well, we're saving personnel issues for the very end.
Right.
So, I guess in that regard, because it's a personnel matter, if you would write up a memo to the board members and give us your final thoughts on how you see that office functioning, what personnel you need, so that we can take a final look at your numbers.
Okay.
But, you know, Tony, I was talking with Bob earlier. Bob mentioned it, you know, we threw a lot of curveballs at you, not just this year, but last year as well. I'm impressed with the budget that you put together. You've been really flexible as far as looking for ways to cut money, save money, be more efficient, look at programs objectively. Sometimes it's really difficult when you've been providing a program for so long and it's struggling to make a move on that. And just don't want to compliment you on your budget. It was probably next to Highway, which we're going to take on next, that is probably the most complicated budget to take a look at to make sure that you can still make those cuts and accomplish your mission for next year.
Absolutely. I mean, a good thing is moving forward. I know that we were talking earlier in the Recreation Management Magazine, the October edition was about spray parks and the increasing number of them that are going in communities all over. So, I mean, what we're looking at doing and making these improvements to the park, this is a good step. I would be willing to sacrifice a struggling program to make improvements to the park and get the equipment that we need to maintain our facilities and bring our facilities back up where people are attending it. I know and I'll mention this briefly at the our department head meeting when I talk in front of everybody, but since we put the dogs in, we've seen a number of people walking their dogs now at the park, so there was a huge step in that aspect of things. There's at least two people a day that have been up there walking it, and now the park is now available for dogs and people to bring their pets there. And the posts are already purchased, already put up, and everything is already running since the last time we talked. Yeah.
Nice.
Everything's done.
And there's fewer geese.
Absolutely. Our famous dog, Tink. So.
Thanks for all of us, Tony.
Not a problem.
Yeah. Thanks, Tony. So left, we covered PAC. We've got Highway and Codes, basically. Those are the two departments that we've got left to consider. And we will save that discussion for our last regularly scheduled meeting, which would be the 24th, October 24th. And we can still have another work session after the public hearing. So if we need additional time, we can always schedule another meeting.
Are we going to talk about the building projects?
I'm sorry, buildings too. Yeah, Al, are you ready?
Yeah.
You guys want to tackle buildings while we're here?
Let's do it.
Okay.
Yeah, kind of do everything else though that we have here.
Yeah, I don't think there's a lot of.
Maybe talk about this too.
Yeah.
Hey, Al.
Hey, Al.
What's up, guys?
Good, how are you?
Good.
Keep busy?
Doing best.
So I had Nancy try to get these in order for me.
Oh, yeah.
I'm going to go eat my dinner. If you need me, call me. Before I get back.
Yeah.
Right here.
Yeah.
I'm just checking out.
Okay, good, good. Okay. Yep. All right.
Yeah, you can have that. That's actually going to go to Dita. That's the original. But there's one coming around for you, I think.
Thank you. Which one? The
number two at the town hall.
Yep.
Remember.
Yeah, we didn't have it in the actual project list last year.
Right.
So it's something that
discussion.
I don't know. It just seems to make sense to me that it's an easy one. Same thing with we got the roof leader in the ditch out front that's eroding a bucket of rock around it just so it doesn't keep eroding the pipes.
Around the building?
No, where the roof leader comes out of the ditch out front. It's all eroded under the pipe.
Oh.
And pipe's been hit once already and it's kind of broken. Just cut it off straight and get some rock around it so it doesn't keep eroding underneath the pipe.
Yeah. All right, so why don't we rifle down through these. I think all of these Alan and I have talked about. The only thing that's relatively new is this that little hoop.
Yeah.
Brian, what should we talked a little bit about it.
Yeah, but I mean, I don't think it's got to be anything huge. Those canvas-topped hoop barns, you build them on the concrete mafia blocks just so we got a spot that we can have a little bit of dry topsoil. It doesn't need to be a huge thing. I haven't even really done a lot of numbers research on it. I've seen, like, advertisements for, like, 24 by 30 ones for, like, $4,000. So you got the cost of the mafia blocks and then whatever the labor for our guys to set it up.
Today I went over and I actually looked at the facility that we use right now for topsoil. If you get a chance, don't get too close, but check it out.
Don't blow on it.
Yeah.
Don't blow on it.
I can't believe we're still working on it.
We got it.
It's an eyesore.
Well, the problem is it's leaning towards the neighbor's property. When it goes, it's going to go on the neighbor's property and it's tall enough, I'm afraid it would hit their back porch.
Yeah,
we gotta dismantle that.
To work out of that facility at all for topsoil, I mean, it's just if we can provide a centralized location for our topsoil on our main campus for highway.
Yeah, I mean, I think you put it at 60. I don't know if I would put it at the actual corner of 60 and West Entry. I think I'd put it at our material storage yard on 60 Road, which is
Road.
I mean, it's only 1,500 feet up the road. Just rather than, I wouldn't say that it's cramped there, but we got plenty of other materials stockpiled in the yard and try to put another.
Yeah.
It just makes sense to put it at 60 Road.
You could always move it. I mean, it's not like it's.
Yeah, it's not like, exactly. It's not a permanent, it's not like a big permanent structure. I mean, it's on concrete blocks and aluminum poles.
Did you talk about having a different idea on location of the coal storage building?
Gene has a different idea.
What's Gene's idea?
What would be the northwest corner in that tree area off the edge of where the employees park. So closer to the road of 60,
close to the parking lot.
Yeah. And his idea would be, or his preference for that site is you'd be able to drive in and drive out. And The only problem with that area is there's a significant...
Full utilities, isn't it?
Well, there's a bunch of utilities there, I'm sure. I don't know exactly what's there because I have a UFPO to it, but it's a significant amount of clearing. I mean,
grubbing, taking trees down.
Yeah, grubbing. Taking the trees down, grubbing out all the stumps, putting in a stabilized base. We already have that in the proposed location.
And if we're going to move it, we'd have to add...
There's cost involved to move it into that location is what I'm getting at. You're going to put an easily another $20,000 on top of what we already estimated to move it to that location.
And if you create a building you can drive through, it's difficult to store.
Well, exactly. You're losing the storage of the drive lane. I mean, I've got ideas that we could do a 12-foot door on the eave side.
Kind of defeats the purpose, doesn't it?
Just saying. do the three doors on the gable end side, and then one 12-foot door on the eave side in the back of the building that you could pull, like, the lawnmowers in.
Sure.
The roller in, the, you know, the smaller pieces of equipment that we don't necessarily use in the winter, and it makes it easier to get them in and out in the summer if we're storing them in there as well, rather than having to take stuff out of the front.
Have to move stuff around.
Yeah, and that's not a huge expense. It's not a huge addition in cost.
All right. I guess we should at least listen to his...
Yeah.
Okay.
So one has been on there.
Yep.
Yep.
So two we just talked about.
Yep.
Phase two in town hall.
That's the justice part, right?
Yep, the justice.
Is that all justice, phase two?
No, $30,000. Their grant is up to $30,000. Total project cost, right? I've got 10% contingency, and that still is $45,000. We got an estimate from a contractor for the JCAP grant application, and we got a formal estimate from our contractor that does the security work. So, and then I put 10% on it just because there are some any project there's unknowns.
Right.
So
the total project cost for the Justice Court is 45, of which we might get 30.
Correct.
No. Right? No, that's the total cost of everything.
The total cost of everything. That's not, there's
other components outside of
the actual courtroom that wouldn't be covered. Like, we're going to put a fob on the door to the utility room because that's where our security, all our security stuff is. We got to move the doors on the cafeteria because this becomes a... essentially, those bathrooms become just for the court, and the bathrooms out there.
All right, so there's other items
that wouldn't be covered under the JCAP grant.
Yeah, we
can't do other stuff in the building. We can't pay for other stuff in the building under the JCAP grant.
Are the bathrooms including in the 45 or no?
No,
no,
no.
Nope.
Gonna have to suffer.
So that could be the following year project, maybe.
This page, David, is on page 50. Is this the 90 grand that we're talking about over there?
Supposed to be, yes.
Okay.
This actually totals out
to... close to.
It's close.
90,000.
This is the first time I've seen this list.
Yeah, yes.
That's all
right. We're trying to stay within...
And we had a
I knew that
list.
It was an estimate, and it does say to be determined, so I get that. I just want to make sure I'm putting the numbers in the right place.
Yep.
Okay.
I mean, everything else is...
What are the chances of us getting this grant, though? I mean... I know we're competing. I know we're applying.
I'll tell you what. Judge Mantione was very thorough.
Yeah, he did some homework on that.
He did a lot of homework. Al was very thorough in helping him. We've been lucky with grants over the last couple of years.
If we don't get it, do we move forward anyway?
I was just going to ask that question.
Well, the part of for that last sentence that we have there, to be eligible for the grant funding, we have to allocate money in the budget
to do it.
To even qualify.
So we're doing that.
So we're putting the money in the budget, but it doesn't mean we have to spend it.
Right.
No,
so if we get $30,000,
right,
then we're going to have $30,000 to go towards any number of other recommendations, or it goes to fund balance for next year.
Right. But if we don't get it,
then we're
spending our money.
It's spending our money.
Okay.
But
But the risk the idea is that we will spend the money.
I would so to be conservative, assume you're going to spend the money. Cross your fingers that you get the grant. If you get the grant, then it's
okay. Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas.
Yep.
We applied for this grant before when we were denied, and we learned some of the reasons why we were denied, and so we tweaked it. We made some changes. It makes sense from a building standpoint. Anyways, we're not recommending these changes because there's a grant opportunity. We found a grant to help us with the changes that we think are needed for the building and the safety of our employees. Phase one has gone really well. It worked perfectly for tax collections. It really, actually, to give you an example how phase one, how well that worked, Nancy was moved out of Parks into the new office area. Mm-hmm. Cindy from the assessor's office would have to come over and help when it got busy. Well, this year, Dan Picardo, his office is right there. If Nancy was getting slammed, he's right there. He'd come out and help her. It took a huge burden off of the assessor's office. Teresa actually mentioned that she didn't think that she could spare the staff this year. So that worked out. Parks is front and center. Everybody that paid their bill in person had to walk by the Parks Department. They were exposed to our programming pamphlets. And it emptied out that back room, and it's going to allow us to explore opportunities to rent space now. Mm-hmm. So it's phase one was really good. Phase two just makes this section of the building all court.
And meetings.
Okay.
But it separates court operations and...
Much more secure.
And it's much more secure. All right. Is that all for buildings?
That's all I had for buildings. Yeah, that was... the rest of it Dave covers in his... the rest of it's routine utilities and...
The other thing that we might want to consider, if we get this grant and we were able to save money, I mentioned earlier that, we're putting together the Town of Lysander Emergency Operations Plan. One of the goals there, and I think we need to talk about this as a board, is making this an emergency shelter. We've had multiple instances of power outages here, mm-hmm. and when we lose power here, we lose everything. We lose our phones, we lose internet access, we're shut down. And when things are at their worst, you want your government to be able to function. I know there are some other emergency shelters in the area. A lot of them are in fire departments, but you don't necessarily want people bunking where apparatus is pulling in and out and you're running an emergency operation. So we have a shower here, we have a kitchen here, we have bathrooms here, we have ample space. But a backup generator is a requirement of a shelter. And I've already started talking with Will Barkley to see if there's any money available for us. Van Buren got...
$5,000, right?
No. They got the 30...
Oh, the cost of the generator?
Yeah.
Their generator was $35,000. Their building is less square footage than ours, so ours is would need to be a little bigger.
42 kilowatt.
Yeah, ours was pushing 70.
So Van Buren has one?
They have one, and they have a grant for it. And their facility is a shelter. They actually have cots up in the,
storage area.
So do we need one if Van Buren already has one?
Well, there's 22.
I realize that, but I'm just saying that they have, we already have one municipality with a shelter. We have, the fire departments. I'm just asking.
Well, that's going to be part of when we do the... called the TLEOP. It's a dumb name, but it works. When we do that operations plan, that emergency operations plan, we'll have all first responders at the table. And
okay.
This is something that we'll be talking about, and it'll be probably a recommendation that emanates from that process.
Okay.
But I'm just giving you a heads up. If we're lucky enough to get 30 grand, or good enough, not lucky, if we're good enough to get 30 grand in a grant, then maybe we reallocate those resources towards that generator, which puts us that much closer towards an emergency shelter and backup, just so that we can operate.
Please disregard my typo that Dave just pointed out to me. I didn't change the, when I did the heading on this, I didn't change 2016 to 2018 on our building. building maintenance memo.
Oh, ridiculous. That's it.
Yes, I know.
That is it.
You know what, Al? The book will give you all that for 2016.
It's all gone.
Yeah. Following line.
All right. Thanks, Al. All right. It's one less thing we got to cover the next meeting. Appreciate it, Al. Thanks for getting that together by tonight. Teresa, you want to address us?
Sure.
Okay. Come on in.
On the budget?
Yeah, for now. Not done.
Not done?
Paused.
I'm going to move to the spectators.
Get out of here.
You're going to what? Get out of here?
I'm going to move to the spectators.
Teacher, you come sit over here.
I think if he sees it, he sees
it. You can see the water.
Thank you very much.
You want one, Al? Are you staying?
No, I'm getting. I'm getting well, getting good.
Give me a couple of dates next week when you're
available. Okay.
Yeah. Put one in the other Bob's box so he has it. Tony,
Bob 2.
Bob number 2. Yep.
Here's the good news for Teresa. Disregard that page 2.
Thank God. Yeah, that was horrid.
Yes. I have a simplified version for you in your packet.
A layman's term?
I got an email from the county director on September 12th. The governor signed the provision allowing the Cold War veterans exemption, which we already have in the town of Lysander, that had a 10-year sunset. So the exemption, when it was passed, went for 10 years. The 10 years is coming up in, I think, 2 years. So the governor signed by local option that you can choose to make it permanent. If you do nothing, it sunsets at the end of the 10 years. So that's the first thing. That's the email that I got from the county director. That's that first document that I gave you. The underlined part on the second page is basically what we're changing in the law, okay? Basically changing that 10-year sunset to a permanent exemption by local option. The next information is actually our local law. It's in plain English. It's a little easier to understand. The local law from our code, and what we would be changing would be item C, which is on the second page. The exemption provided shall be granted for a period of 10 years. That was the way the exemption was passed and presented initially. So you would be changing that. If you choose to change
the exemption, so just read the exemption provided by local law 121-25 shall be permanent.
Yep. And basically, it says in this in that underlined paragraph that notwithstanding the 10-year limitation imposed by the foregoing provisions of this paragraph, subparagraph, a county, city, town, village, or school district that has adopted a local law of resolution pursuant to paragraph A of this subdivision may adopt a local law or resolution providing that the exemption authorized by this section shall apply to qualifying owners of qualifying real property for as long as they remain qualifying owners without regard to such 10-year limitation. So that's basically what the change would be. And then, after that, you have the taxable values and the number of exemptions.
So whenever we look at any type of exemption, you want to understand the impact that it's going to have on the. We did that with solar law. What are these exemptions? Now these are dollars that we haven't ever seen anyways, because this law is in effect.
It's already in effect. So the first page, I highlighted the exemption amount of $2,925,888. That's for the village, inside the village, the town outside, for a total of 103 exemptions total up to that. And that's based on the most current assessment roll that we have completed, which is 2017. Using the tax rates of 1.7596, which is the county and the highway rate for 2017, it comes out to in dollars $5,148.39. So that's the dollar impact. Joe had asked me, how do the exemptions vary? you know, have we had a lot more this year than last year? So I went back 5 years and went back to 2013. At that time, we had 78 exemptions, okay? In 2014, we went up to 85 exemptions plus 7, so a little bit of a change. In 2015, it was 97 exemptions plus 12. 2006 was 101, which was 4 than the year before. 2017 was 103, which is what I gave you, mm-hmm. which was 2 more than the previous year. And 2018, we're up thus far, because we're already working on next year, we're up to 109 exemptions, which would be plus 6. So there is a little bit of a change. So over 5 years, we went from 78 to 109. Exemptions. So it doesn't change by a whole lot. People move, you know, they go somewhere else, the exemption goes with them. People move to the town, and, you know.
It covers a massive amount of time mm-hmm. in history. I mean, the Cold War went for years and years, and a lot of people served during the Cold War. So I just wanted to make sure, I wanted to know, understand what the impact was going to be. This isn't, they also, veterans also have other options. Like, this isn't on top of
this.
They have a choice. They can take this or another exemption.
Actually, they can't.
They can't.
Basically, we have a number of what we call old style veterans exemptions. We don't grant those any longer. Those typically are larger exemptions. The result of the Korean War and World War II primarily. And we call those, and then there's an eligible funds exemption, which came out at the same time period, where if you used some of your mustering out pay to purchase a property, it was equalized into an exemption, and then over time they change it. We don't grant those anymore. So basically, when those owners move, in some cases, you can transfer them, but you can't make a new application. But they're gradually going away as they get the property owners get older. The ones we have now that are current and that we offer are the alternative. That's what we've had for years. We went from that old style exemption to the alternative, which is a percentage based. That's strictly for periods of wartime. In order to get that, you had to serve during World War I, specified dates. World War II, specified dates. And it's all in the law. You have to serve during those time frames. Korean War, Vietnam War, and Desert Storm, which covers all of our new veterans, because anything after it's either 95 or 99 are covered under that. So if they qualify because they served during one of those war times, the exemption is the alternative. They can't pick and choose. That's the one that's been in place. That's the one we've been granting. This exemption basically covers those time frames that fell in between. They call it a Cold War exemption, but it covered those periods of time that fell between those war eras, what they called the war eras. So if they serve during one of the times outside of those war eras, then they get the Cold War instead of the alternative, and you can't in any case get both.
Can't get both, okay. Right.
Unless you have a spouse, two spouses that have both served, then they both qualify for whatever exemption is based on that.
Is there an end date, or is it all any time between
are those
two conflicts?
Until they change the exemption or the law, right now, anybody that serves, you have to be discharged. So if you're active military, you don't qualify unless you've been discharged. And if you serve and you're not in a combat zone, what we call a combat zone, you get 15% up to a certain ceiling. Okay, and that's the same for Cold War and alternative. If you served and you went to combat, you get an extra 10. So you would get, instead of the 15, you would get the 25%. If you have a disability, you get 50%. If you are a disabled veteran based on service, you get 50%, that's another line item on that exemption. You get 50% of what your disability is. So if you have a 100% disability, you get 50% up to the ceilings that are set in the law.
I'm glad you understand this.
It's crazy.
There's a lot to it.
It's crazy.
Wow.
But with the Cold War, basically, what you're looking at is your
so
choices
it's filling
are...
filling in the gaps.
Yeah, it's right. Filling in the gaps for the people that served in between those lit war specified in-law war eras. And the exemption is already in place. If you do nothing, it sunsets. I believe it's 2019. I'd have to look and see. So they have it for a couple more years. If you decide to make it permanent, then anybody who qualifies ownership and property-wise would get that exemption, but they can't choose the exemption. They have to take one or the other based, and it's based primarily on when they served and where they served and whether they're disabled. And we get all of that on their discharge paperwork.
So why don't we read through this and then maybe set... public hearing date at the next.
Yeah, it's not a huge rush. By the end of the year is plenty enough time, because we're not looking at a sunset, you know, in 2018. So you have lots of time to look at the material. If you have any questions, please let me know. Do you have any questions now?
No.
What are the last two pages?
The last two pages are a breakdown of the town outside and the village. So the 324,225, that's the number of exemptions in the village,
yeah.
14, okay? And those two numbers add up to the first page.
Gotcha.
That okay. 2,000,006 is the town outside.
Gotcha, okay.
Okay?
Yep.
All right.
Thanks, Therese. Very thorough.
Can I ask real quick question?
Sure.
Is that allowed?
Yeah, yeah. Absolutely.
Sure.
Did I hear you say that if you had a husband and wife that both served in the military,
mm-hmm.
they would both get a...
Yes, they would. They,
both,
if
they
they're,
both get an exemption?
Yeah, if they've served in the military and they're honorably discharged and meet the requirements,
right.
they can both have their own individual percentage exemption based on their individual service.
Whether they were in combat or
yeah, yeah.
they were during a conflict.
Yes.
Yeah.
But it's a property tax exemption, so they'd have to both be on the deed. Does that come into?
Yes, typically yes. They do.
Yeah.
Yeah. Usually they both. It's qualifying ownership and
right,
property.
So they both have to.
So
be on
they
the
help.
Deed.
In most cases, they both have to be on the deed. But yes, we actually have a few that have two exemptions, and they always kind of freak us out because when we see two exemptions, especially if they're the same. You know, duplicate. They look like they're duplicates, but yes, if they both have served and they both have made an application, they can both have an exemption.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Thanks, Tristan.
All right. I will see you all later.
Thanks.
Careful.
Yep.
So I spent a good chunk of the day working on the DASNY grant. There's a lot of paperwork that we need to pull together as far as the initial official application. We have to show that we have the title of the property. We've got a lot of it's been done, but it's and Al will attest to it. It's a process. It's an arduous process. So that's I would guess that we will submit the first phase of this grant paperwork. Within by mid-November, and then hopefully, you know, if these folks at DASNY are accurate in their,
they can jump in that.
They can now. There's a process. You know, we need to do a seeker on it. I don't think we've done that yet. We did that with cold storage.
We got to do a seeker on
it. In the spray part.
Yeah.
Didn't you?
I've got it all together. We just have another resolution.
Oh, yeah.
So we'll put that on the next meeting agenda. One of the other requirements is they want to see a financial commitment that it's going forward before they sign the contract.
Yeah, this grant can't go towards long-term financing. So if we bonded for it, if we went into like, it can't go more than 5 years. We could ban for it, but we can't use this money in a bond. Or we can't use this money towards things that we're going to bond for. So we can split that out. Or we could just do a bond resolution allowing for a certain amount of money to be borrowed minus the $100,000. So if we think that the project's a $500,000 project, we could do a bond resolution for $400,000. Now that doesn't mean we're going to borrow $400,000. That just means that we can borrow up to $400,000 for that project. But the state wants to know that we're serious about the project. It's a good chunk of change, and you know, at some point we need to make that clear. So I would guess something somewhere along the lines of mid-November by the time we get all this straightened out. Tony and I also went to the Central New York
Wetland Park Society.
Yes.
Yeah, and I've been working on the application for that grant.
It's a $20,000 grant. That's going to be cumbersome. They're going to be very thorough in reviewing our application. But they were very positive about it. I walked away from that meeting thinking that we had a very good shot at that. And then I've been approached by two other organizations that are very interested in being private funders slash donors. One of the things that I think we need to talk about is like naming rights, coming up with a dollar amount that we might ask for. Do we come out with just a solicitation letter to all entities that might be interested? You know, I don't want to offend any organization, but at the same time, you know, we don't want to leave any opportunities unsolicited. So I'm working on a solicitation letter that's going to go out, and then I plan on meeting with those entities that are interested. The goal, you know, you get with anything that you do, you got to have a goal. My goal is to raise $100,000 in donations, whether they be in materials or services that we need towards the park, whether it be trucking or
cash money.
Cash, we'll take cash. Cash is king. But any materials, anybody that, you know, that this is going to be a process. That's the fun part, you know. That's when the community kicks in, and so hopefully we get to a point where if we do have to borrow, you know, if it's $100,000, a bond is
peanuts.
You wouldn't, right. If you borrowed at all. So I'd like to get it down. The goal is to get the overall contribution from the public at around $100,000. That's the goal. I don't know if that's going to happen, but that's the goal. That's my update. Tony, did you have anything?
No, just the Central New York grant application.
Yeah, and they gave us a bunch of other organizations that might also be willing to help. So,
why would you suck the bar so low at $100,000, you would not have confidence that you could raise more than that?
Right, man. You want to jump on that team?
Well, 100. Sound like a sales guy.
Well, I thought that was kind of high, but
if you're soliciting businesses and residential,
yep, combination. I mean, don't get me wrong. You know, I also believe in setting attainable goals.
Yeah. Well,
what do you?
Stars.
I'll tell you, we're a very generous community. Mm-hmm. Where there are people in this community that always step up. They always step up. So I didn't mean to insult this community. Like $100,000.
I'm not saying anything about that. I'm just thinking $100,000 in this day and age doesn't seem like a whole lot of money. When you've got a lot of businesses around here, including Budweiser.
The only thing about Budweiser, and they may want to contribute. Typically, though, they stay away. They shy away from children's
activities,
and I just know that from experience. They used to give the village $5,000 a year just for community events. One of the events I wanted to put a Wizard of Oz movie on the island, which they supported, but they were like, yeah. that was like, you know, Kids Wizard of Oz brought to you by Budweiser. You know, it's, you know, it was, they actually, yeah, so.
They also make water.
They use water. They use a lot of water.
They bottle a lot of water for down south.
Yep. They're a great organization, don't get me wrong, but, so we will leave no rock unturned.
Sure. Okay.
I like, you know, I like your attitude, though.
I'm just throwing it out there.
I appreciate it. I do.
But if you get, let's say everything comes through and all of a sudden you get the grant, where are you going to come up with the money to put the spray park in next year? If you don't budget for it, what are you going to budget for?
No, we would if there was a gap, we would bond or ban for the gap and continue to solicit funds for the park.
With a bond or a ban, you don't have to hold a public hearing?
We would, with a bond.
But I thought the state said they wanted to see that we're going to put the money up front first.
They want to know that the project has financial backing from the municipality, and typically a municipality to cover itself if they want to move forward on a project, and they're in this situation where they've got some money, they know that there's other monies out there, they'll just go out for a bond resolution authorizing at some point the municipality the ability to borrow towards the project. And I guess it's just up to us to determine what that bond resolution would be. So, you know, if you authorize a bond resolution of $400,000, and we did a miraculous job and we raised another $200,000, there might not be a need to borrow at all. Or the need would be so small that we wouldn't bond, we would ban. It would be, bans are typically 5-year bond anticipatory notes.
Yeah.
You
just still do the bond resolution, but the bond resolution authorizes the whole thing, and then you borrow, you know, each year on a bond anticipation note.
Until it's
5 years, or you can pay it off in less than 5 years, you know, depending on what it is. But
well, I guess my question is, you're doing the budget right now. The state wants to see that you're going to have money toward this project.
Yep.
If you want to get the money next year, so we should be budgeting for it.
Well, the bond resolution. Once you authorize the bond resolution, basically you have the money. All you got to do is go to the bank and sell the bond.
Yeah, but we won't. So here's the thing.
I understand that, but like when we buy a truck, I've never seen us just go to buy a truck. It's the same thing. We get a bond for that.
Right.
But we budgeted for buying a truck the mm-hmm. previous year.
Yeah. So in this instance, I'll give you an example. If we did a bond resolution and gave authorization for the board at some point in time to borrow money towards the project, we might never borrow money. Maybe we would take out a bond next spring. You have a year before you start paying back a bond or a ban. So it wouldn't necessarily impact next year at all. If we didn't go out for a ban or bond until January, February, March of next year, that would not impact the fiscal 2018 budget. That would have an impact on the 2019 budget.
Okay, I understand that, but I thought you said to get the grant, we have to show the state that we're going to spend the money.
We need to show the state that we're committed to the project, and that we've authorized the ability of the town to borrow money towards the project if we need to.
Right, which means you're going to authorize next year to borrow money.
Yeah,
you're going to take care of it next year's budget?
No.
If you decide? Okay,
no.
So I'm really confused.
Yeah, so if after 12/31/2017, on New Year's Day, we go out for a bond or a ban, either one, we don't start paying back on that for a year. So it doesn't impact next year's budget. The first payment would be January 1, 2019. It would have an impact the following year. The
so
state
budget for it in 2018 then.
So you're going to budget for it next fall. If you
No. No, no, we would not, we would, no. You only budget the money when you're going to start paying it back. We wouldn't start paying back any borrowed money until 2019.
Okay. So next fall's budget, you would budget for...
For the next year.
Whatever the payment.
Right.
Okay.
So, I know that can be confusing. But that's the update. Any questions? Now I got pressure. 100,000 not enough. So, all right, Mercer Street. Al.
Documentation.
Thank you.
No, Dave's not there. Okay. So, Mercer Street actually has gone very well. A couple things have come up. One was an issue with some stone that came, started coming the Friday of Columbus weekend. Got a few loads Saturday. They brought a couple loads Saturday, and then Monday it continued. That was slightly out of specification. We did a lab analysis of the stone. We took 6 samples in total. The 2 samples that came out of the stone that came in those days came out slightly out of spec for fines content. One was 18.8%, one was 15.5%. Maximum of DOT item 4 subbase is 10. So I went back to Seneca Stone, said, hey, so there's something going on. Right away on Monday when I spotted it, said, put him on notice that, hey, the stone doesn't look like it's in specification. We're going to do some lab analysis on it and see where we're at. So in knowing that I didn't feel that it was quite to spec, we had some undercuts. In addition to the stone issue, we had some undercuts, some watery, soft, subgrade soils that needed to be boxed out further and additional stone put in, which will have to be paid for with a change order. But what we did is we put the stone that had too much fines in it in the bottom of those undercuts, essentially keeping it away from the surface of the road, which should reduce the potential for fines migration. Seneca Stone has indicated that they were willing to credit us for the total tonnage that was delivered out of spec on those 3 days. I asked for a bond. They came back today and said that they would like to do a written agreement with a warranty for a period of 3 years. It's certainly a long-established company. They've been around for over 100 years. They proofread it with me today. They indicate they found between 140 and 150 feet of additional areas that they would like to see undercut because they're warranting it. However, they offered to pay for those areas. They're going to mobilize in their machine. They're going to box them out. They're going to pay for the stone and everything to do them, because I truly don't feel that most of the areas that they identified warrant an additional undercut. But if they're putting their name on it and they're going to pay for it, by all means, I'm all for it.
It's cheaper to do it now than to
absolutely
risk it.
Absolutely. So with that being said, that's kind of where we're at. I'll work with Tony on some kind of a legal agreement for the performance of the stone on how we handle that going forward, as long as the board's okay with it.
And they're going to put a performance bond on it?
They don't want to do a bond. They want to do a written warranty, which, as long as Tony's okay with it.
What if they go bankrupt?
They've
been around for
over 100 years. They're
a long time.
Well-established corporation.
How much money are we talking about?
It would be the value of the stone and the blacktop, so 110,000 bucks.
Wasn't it just the lower half of Mercer?
Yeah, that's where all that stone ended up. Was the east side of Dexter Parkway. And like I said, to mitigate any potential or fines migration, we made sure we've got that stone on the bottom of undercut areas. So I'm 100% confident that we're not going to have an issue. However, they
say 99.9.
However, they gave us material that does not meet the specs that we required. There needs to be
a guarantee because of that.
All right, Tony, you're going to work on the guarantee, and you're good with it.
I'm okay with it. Gene has indicated he's okay with it, right, Gene? So that's where we're at. Right now, they're gonna do the undercuts, the additional undercuts they want to see done tomorrow, and they have a road grader there. So we're shooting for Monday. If we can get one end paved and graded completely tomorrow, they may be mobilized in Monday to start paving. It's either going to be Monday or Tuesday they'll be paving.
So do you think by the end of next week they'll be done?
Yeah, oh yeah, that's the goal. Yeah, that's they think they can pave it. If everything's ready, they think they can pave it in one day.
And you're just doing binder this year,
just
right?
Just doing binder this year, top of the spring.
Okay.
So, you know, that's other than those two little, I mean, and the undercut in the neighborhood is called Indian Springs for a reason. I mean, finding some soft soils up there isn't exactly surprising. We got lucky on Crego Street. We didn't have a ton of undercuts that we had to do, but not so lucky on Mercer.
Okay, spent hours up there watching them work with that. What's the machine called that takes up the
mill?
The mill.
Yeah.
They were milling what, a foot?
10 inches.
10 inches. Amazing, this thing. $800,000 piece of equipment. They've got 20 of them.
Wow.
Just rock and rolled. It was awesome.
Yeah, pretty cool piece of equipment.
Very nice.
Awesome.
Thanks for the update.
I did not put it on the. You got something else you want to go right into or no?
We got time.
Yeah. I did not put it on the work session agenda, but I did a letter about the River Grove private road dedication
request.
Request. I know Joe sent you the planning board meeting minutes already. I gave you an additional copy attached to this letter. Several things that I'd like to, that everybody needs to be aware of. The residents there have indicated that they're the only development in Radisson with private roads, and that's simply not true. Other roads, private roads with multiple residents include Graymore Way, Drummers Court, Piper's Court, Sumac Drive, Center Point Drive, Drummond Heights Drive, Whitesboro Road, Gray Birch Extension, and Blakewood Court. All of those are private roads with multiple residential properties on them. If we take these, we're going to end up taking those two. They were... The roads weren't designed to the town standards. The radius of the cul-de-sac that's there may be within the town's design standards. However, it's tight enough that we'd still have to plow it in the opposite direction, and because there's houses in the middle of that cul-de-sac, you can't see what's coming at you. It's really a hazard from a snow removal standpoint to try to remove snow from that road with the equipment that we currently have. The owners were notified when they bought the property that there was an additional HOA that was required for snow removal, or they're on a private road and they were required to pay for snow removal. This isn't something new. They were, all given this information when they bought. I will say this, since I wrote this letter, it's my understanding that I found out what the actual HOA fees are, and it's $160 a month, and they haven't gone up in the 13 years since the development was started.
And the developer controls that.
And the developer controls that right now because he still has lots. Obviously, it's to the developer's disadvantage if he's trying to sell lots if he raises the homeowners association fee.
Sure.
But
your point is you think that there's a good chance that the HOA is underfunded.
Correct.
Are the HOA fees taking care of plowing?
Yes.
Yep. And road maintenance.
They have a separate HOA in that development.
It's different than...
Not Radisson. On top of Radisson, they have their own separate HOA in that project.
Jerry lives on Graymore.
Yeah. So just like your street, Kevin. Yep. So,
$235 a month. That's what we pay, but that includes the outside maintenance, the roof,
yep,
plowing, mowing. So, but there's a ballpark for you.
Yeah,
on top of the $90 a quarter we pay Rams.
Hmm. So, I mean, the argument that we're the only development in Radisson that we has the situation is.
Did I hear that there might be a request to change the site plan of that, or no?
Another developer called me that's interested in buying the remnant piece that would want to change the layout and do the other half of that in larger estate lots, 3/4 of an acre to 1 acre lots.
Could you let this board know if that request becomes official?
Yeah, well, obviously it would have to go in front of the planning board because it would require.
I would hope that the planning board would consider the financial ramifications of the existing residents and how they would be negatively impacted on that.
Well, I don't know if they would be.
Same amount of road?
No, less road frontage.
Oh, less road.
Well, less road frontage because they're going to have less lots. They would reconfigure that significantly.
I thought that they would have the same roads.
No. There's no need to build that much.
That's good.
Yeah, not that. It would be significantly less road, so it actually helped those. Could potentially help the existing residents.
Yeah, I'm sure you guys will do the calculations on it.
Yeah, we'll keep them. Yeah, we'll make sure we give them as much protection as we can.
I think you guys. If you look back and you read those notes from the planning board, Fred Rude was prophetic when he said 15 years from now those residents will come back here begging the town to take those roads.
It didn't make it 15 Hornaday. Years.
And Mr. Hornaday. Yep.
So that was something that Bob requested. I know Bob's not here, but from an economic analysis, that's the biggest.
Put that in his mailbox.
If we were to use, it is, it needs to be mentioned because I looked at this. Al and I talked about this. If we were to use the same formula that we use when we consider overlay districts, the model works as far as tax dollars generated for infrastructure. But beyond that, there are ramifications as far as possibly having to add additional equipment and routes. Because like Tony and Al said, this could be a domino effect. If you accept one,
right,
you're probably going to have to accept all of them. And these are the private roads in Radisson. There are private roads
all Yeah, that's over, not all the all private drives the out on the western side of town going down to the river. That's not.
So that's
just Radisson.
Right.
They're not even the only ones in Radisson. This isn't. I mean, we've got another, a great example of a town road that we accepted that wasn't to specifications is Farnham Road. Farnham Road is a disaster. It's not even in the right of way we own. It's not even in the right. I mean, we took dedication of a road that's not even constructed in the piece of property that we own. And the road's a
disaster.
It is. It's a safety hazard. It's got a curve that's super elevated the wrong way. That's blind. You can't see what's coming at you. It's a very steep grade approaching the curve. It's a mess.
Don't we run the plows backwards down that for traction? Don't we spread salt backwards? I heard a rumor.
Occasionally.
Dirty little secrets.
When we can't plow it, we should just close it, or it should be maybe changed to being a seasonal maintenance road.
Is there a back way out of there?
Nope.
Sorry. See you in the spring.
Out through that other farm, but that farm is private, so it's just.
You know when we took it.
Situation that never should have happened.
Yeah, I saw the work done last year in those rainstorms, or last spring or summer.
70s or 80s.
On this other thing, Al's letter would add my amen to everything that he said. But I would also add the consideration that the developers who have built their developments to our town spec might be interested in
a rebate if we take this other thing off spec. How would you feel if you were a developer that built everything to spec, and then this development comes along and it's accepted without having been built properly?
And we don't know. There's no way for us to know that unless we went and started boring holes in a private road, and we don't really want to do that.
Joe, can we have a 10-minute executive session before this meeting? Do we have time?
Yeah. Are we done talking about the letter?
Yeah, I'm good. I just wanted to...
All right, then I'll report back to the residents that we discussed it, and maybe we put forth a formal resolution in considering it, and we vote on it to put it to bed officially.
Yeah.
Okay.
Can we talk about this for a couple seconds?
Oh, yeah, I wanted to have that down.
I'm not good at these and don't fully understand it. Why is there two separate ones? Does David understand these?
Yes. David is the point of the spear.
Yeah, what this is, MVP is the insurance that is offered to our retirees. And
Just retirees.
So you have to be Medicare eligible to be on this MVP plan. So
this is a supplement?
Yes, to Medicare.
Yeah.
This is their secondary.
Exactly.
Gotcha.
So the increase in the premiums, there's two amounts, and that's because the one that you see for the $398.10,
yep,
which is the Medicare Gold Anywhere plan, that covers everybody that's in-state that lives within New York State. The one for $424.60, excuse me, which is the USA Care PPO plan, covers anybody out of state, and we have one person that lives in Florida that's covered on this plan. The rate increase is for the $398.10. It went up 4%. It was $383.80. It's going to be $398.10. So that's an increase of 4%. And just as a reminder, in case you guys don't know this, retirees pay 15% towards their premium.
Toward it.
And then the other one that the one person is in is going up $4, or less than 1%, actually.
Okay. All
right.
Thank you.
Thank you. Do you know how many retirees we have?
13.
I'm sorry?
13.
13.
It's retirees, and there's a few spouses in there
families
as well. But there's 13 people on this plan.
All right. Any other questions? Can I get a motion to go into what's it related to? Can I get a motion to go into executive session related to a personnel matter?
I'll second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
All those opposed? Motion carried. We're in executive session. We'll be back. Gonna move this now?
Yeah, you got it.
Here. Deer piss when you go home.
Thank you, sir.
Is it still on? Yeah, hit. You want to hit pause on that? Or stop?
Let's put this back.